The Camp by Daryl Pinkney. Imagine the scene I cannot write. The colonel steps onto the platform, reciting to himself, "I'll tell you how the sun rose, a ribbon at a time." It is New Year's Day. The president has signed the historic war measure. The colonel was not alone in his feeling that after the disgrace of Bull Run, the Union needed to take Port Royal Island, and after the slaughter at Fredericksburg, Port Royal needed this convocation. White women in bonnets and white men in vests crowd the platform. The colonel studies the first South Carolina volunteers arrayed before him. It is the first black unit. The men adore campfire, spelling books, and tobacco, but none of them drink. Most have freed themselves, take a ride on a federal gunboat, and join the cause. A bayonet for a pick, a rifle for a spade. The colonel told state senators in Rhode Island and newspaper editors in New York City that freedmen, an attack on rebel breastworks, make the war to save the Union, an anti-slavery war. McClellan lost command. The might of Lincoln's arithmetic abides. The Union plus 200,000 black warriors will equal liberty. Visitors admire the decoration of the quarters. The wall is covered in variously colored shells. Everywhere, the colonel sees black women in their Sunday kerchiefs. God's blessings are on dress parade. The colonel hands final emancipation proclamation to a penitent white man who used to be called Master over in Beaufort. The colonel said oof when he first got his copy. The orderly's breathing told him that he too had read the proclamation, had felt power naked, actual armed rebellion naked, suppressing said rebellion naked, shall be free naked, maintain freedom of said persons naked. The prayer is over. The former master of cotton is no orator, but the colonel is where power and freedom are forging God's naked sword. He marvels at the Lord's invention, the sheer darkness of his men. Is it not glorious to be handsome? The colonel is ready to receive the regimental colors, not far away enough from the parade, 10 oxen revolve on spits. It is not the moment for the colonel to be reminded by his senses that he has had nothing to eat. He has been too full of history to dare more than barrel water in his palms. The colonel fights to remain in this sacred place where every heart desires the same thing. He receives the regimental colors and is wrapped again in the honor of their assault on rebel transports on the St. Mary's River without the loss of a man. Beyond the live oaks, another steamer arrives on the blue water. Seated nearby are the camp's brilliant surgeon and its most beautiful school teacher, the colonel's friends from home, Boston. It is not that she is a black woman and he a white man, a free black woman whose family is richer than either of theirs, the colonel did not say, thanks to her famous grandfather, Revolutionary War hero, owner of a big sail-making company in Philadelphia. The surgeon's Quaker beard is shining, and the schoolteacher's head is uncovered. The surgeon reads his wife's letters to the schoolteacher. How very good and noble he is, she has merrily cried to the colonel. The colonel's wife is an invalid, and the surgeon's wife is plain. The schoolteacher is an unfair quadroon beauty. Her family knows William Lloyd Garrison, and Whittier writes futile poems to her and her abolitionist sisters. She abandoned her novels in French and verses in Latin to come south and teach the freed people of Port Royal. She is so popular, some days 100 pupils of all ages block the door and two windows of the church that is her schoolroom. He has heard her call it Calathumpian, the noise members of the first South Carolina volunteers make when they pull her battered carriage uphill from the landing, as though she were their princess. She and the surgeon love to talk of their love for horses, moonlight, and the cause. The colonel is ready to receive the Union flag. He cannot help it. He regards the schoolteacher. No one is afraid of her. Whatever she thinks to do is proper. This is war, the colonel reflects. The surgeon knows she writes poetry. He would have to go back to South America. He was from Vermont. He was anti-slavery as a child. He came home one day and told his family so. He told both him and the schoolteacher that story on the same afternoon, back in Boston. The colonel has the flag in silence. He slowly waves it, thinking this is the first time it may hold true meaning for them. An elderly black voice begins to sing, "My country, 'tis of thee." A few black women add their voices, suddenly many. The colonel quiets the white people so that only black people are singing. The school teacher continues to sing, and so does the surgeon. "Of thee I sing." The camp is always full of music, melancholy tunes in twilight, softer songs in the sentry dark, rising up songs even before reveille, and sometimes teamster work songs during the day. Unforgettable hymns on a Sunday, but this is different. The difference makes the colonel close his eyes. The words become long and low. "Let freedom ring." The colonel drifts through oxen-scented air, and a son of Massachusetts can hear crickets and mockingbirds on New Year's Day. Male and female voices divide into harmonies. They don't allow the music to trail off. The mass choir raises the last note and then drops it, like that barbershop over on Morris Island, where the free black man refused to shave the contraband alongside white men. Black soldiers gathered, many, weary of being contraband. They picked up the free black man's establishment and unhanded it. Many people are in tears. A ruffian on a tree limb puts his chin down on his knee. The colonel takes a slow salute. They will to the utmost maintain the freedom of said persons. Tonight there will be rockets. Let everyone be a weapon in the days to come. Everyone around them has risen. The schoolteacher and the surgeon take no note. She is chafing her hands, her gloves are in her lap, on her bonnet. Her hair is coming loose, she is speaking so fast. The colonel steps down into the wind, he can guess. The schoolteacher tells the surgeon about the dreams that have stayed with her, dreams that have changed her ideas ever after. It is time. Applause and a cheer say the feast is prepared. These dreams have gone through her and through her. He does indeed hear her almost sing to the surgeon, like wine through water. She does not look up. One dream has forever altered the color of her mind. She does not look up. The colonel can see it. The surgeon is thinking how sweetly she must smile in her sleep. The colonel is upon them and pulls the surgeon up to his true height, bowing to the schoolteacher as her bonnet returns to such hair. The colonel escorts them into the crowd. "We of the 1st South Carolina Volunteers have no ill feelings toward you. We have no prejudice against color, and like white people just as well as black, if they behave as well." The colonel's men roar in approval at his words. He does not walk between his friends from Boston. She, ravishing, he, tightly buttoned, delightful as always in their love that needs him. The colonel leads them toward the smoky tree line, his Abelard and his Eloise and their cause.